Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Hello, Nasty fans. This is Ashley, the Video Nasty Project, presenting 72 movies the British Board of Censors did not want you to see, those moral guardians. Tonight's classic is the 1976 film Eaten Alive, directed by Toby Hooper, who also wrote and directed The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Combine this with a bit of Motel Hell, and you get probably one of the best movies about a hotel manager who feeds people to alligators I've ever seen. So, sit back and relax and enjoy the trailer, and we'll be back to review it in a few seconds.
If you were one of the millions of moviegoers who were electrified by the unbearable suspense and sheer terror of Jaws, get ready for Death Trap.
Ah! You got back.
Mel Ferrer, Carolyn Jones, Stuart Whitman, Neville Brand. Created by Toby Hooper, maker of the screen sensation The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Marty Rustin presents a new horror classic, Death Trap. Into this house of terror comes a handful of unsuspecting innocents.
Hello?
Daddy! What happens to these people in Death Trap will give you the most chilling, terrifying 90 minutes you ever spent in the theater. Death Trap, a VIP picture rated R.
And welcome back. That was Death Trap, a.k.a. Eaten Alive, a.k.a. Starlight Slaughter, a.k.a. probably Motel Hell, because they rip off each other all the time. The movie... Well, there's not really much of a plot to this movie. It's really more of an experience. So, you can sum up the movie by, you have this hotel keeper living on the edge of the bayou. He is a little damaged, shall we say.
He's five cans short of a six-pack and the sanity meter.
He also has a pet alligator.
Or crocodile. We're not sure which.
Whatever. He's got a large beast in a shackled pen with dubious chicken wire in a floating dock. And when people show up and they get proclivious and they get naughty, he feeds them to his alligator. And that's pretty much the movie. The end.
Occasionally he's a little bit more proactive about getting the person.
It starts off with this prostitute in a whorehouse who is obviously a neophile. She is new to this gig. And in comes Freddy Krueger! A.K.A. Buck. Robert Englund. Buck. A.K.A. Buck. And thus, this movie proves that Quentin Tarantino doesn't have a fucking original idea in his head because Englund whips out the I'm Buck, and I'm here to fuck. It's like, oh, fuck you, Tarantino. Fuck you, Tarantino.
By Buck, no less.
Yeah. And the prostitute, she starts tripping out because...
She doesn't do anal.
She doesn't do anal, and Robert wants to do it up the ass. So she's like, I gotta go. The man throws her out and throws all her gear out and gives Buck a couple of honeys to go take upstairs.
So this is Carolyn Morticia Adams Jones.
Who doesn't look anything like Morticia at all.
Elderly potato, basically.
And this she's hunched over.
This is before she did that shot on video Adams Family Halloween special in 78. So obviously she wasn't, bulky in that. She either slimmed down or they padded her out. And
it came as a complete surprise to me when I was watching the credits. I'm like, holy cow, that was her. I had to rewind the film, go back and watch her sequences again. And I still didn't see her in that character. It's like some of the other, there's a lot of great talent in this.
Neville Brand, yeah. For God's sake. Mel Ferrer, Miguel mm-hmm. Ferrer's father.
Marilyn Burns, Stuart Whitman.
Yeah.
No, there's a ton of good quality cast in there.
Yeah, Toby Hooper got a hell of a cast to pull this off.
Yeah. Going back to Robert Englund, his character, Buck, is a complete douchebag, I loved the guy. I thought he was a great character.
Yeah, I was rooting for him to go up against the you know, try and save a little girl from the alligator.
We've always known that Robert Englund can do creepy as fuck. He has a very prominent pedigree in being creepy. But here, his first real acting gig is really, really fucking creepy.
He is just a nasty, unpleasant individual, the sort that you would want to kick out of your bar.
So the prostitute, she gets to the Starlight Hotel. And she's all like, oh, I need a place to stay. I don't have any money. And a Judd is like, wait a minute. You're one of the Madame's girls. You've got to go. You've got to go.
Killing her horribly and bloodily.
Actually, I don't think it's so much that he kills her. It's even creepier. He wounds her badly, knocks her out, then feeds her to the alligator, and she recovers when she gets dumped in the water. Because we see her moving around. Yeah. It's like, she's still alive. That's even worse than just getting killed.
And that's pretty much the movie from this point. Like, people show up to the hotel and they offend Judd somehow. Or they get a little too close to him being
a killer.
And so into the alligator pit they go. Like Mel Ferrer. He and his daughter. They show up looking for the first daughter, which happens to be the prostitute that just got fed to the alligator. And Judd's all like, why don't you go talk to somebody at the whorehouse or the bar or not here?
Or the sheriff.
Or the sheriff or somebody other than me who killed her.
And of course, all roads lead back to Rome in this case in the mm-hmm. middle of this creepy-ass hotel in the middle of nowhere. You know, where nobody in their right mind would stay, so only people down and out or desperate stay there.
Well, I get the impression that the hotel is on the road into town, but it's one of those little towns that's out in the sticks where the only reason to go there is this little itty-bitty postage stamp of a town.
I think the geography of the town and where the hotel is in relationship to it is left intentionally vague because the movie is supposed to be kind of this nightmare fever dream, I'm thinking. You have the really hard lighting, the primary lighting. It's almost like, you know, Toby Hooper took a page from Argento and did Suspiria with the lighting.
I loved the lighting. I thought the lighting was one of the best things about this movie.
It was it was gorgeous looking. Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite Suspiria level, but it was really good looking.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and used in a studio setting, I mean, it's really, really well done. They had complete control over what they needed to do with it.
So you can have control of the fog, you can do the lights, you can mm-hmm. have it completely pitch black if you need to.
Yeah, obviously that's kind of deliberate, especially because they shot it in a studio. So when you have the bar or the cop shop or whatever, they only show the inside of the police station. But when they show the brothel, it's the borders of the door and a little bit on either side of the wall there. And so it feels like there's nothing else there. Or, like, if you want to get from one place to another, you literally got to, like, flatten yourself down and move off the side of the screen in order to make it from one scene to the other. Because there's no dimension to a lot of these places.
And contrasted to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where you have this wide, open, expansive...
South Texas.
Yeah. You've got burning sun just roasting the hell out of the landscape. And here, this movie is all studio-bound, so it's all confined and claustrophobic and very... feels like a stage, which enhances this movie's fever dreamness.
Well, another thing that was really good was the dressing. They, like, within the hotel, there's all this crap, just old furniture and broken up paintings and...
The place is run down as fuck.
Weird curtains and stuff hanging everywhere.
And under the porch where you've got all the junk under there.
Yeah, and then outside around, you've got these tangled branches, you've got bits of scrap, you've got, you know, old rusted cars, you've got all sorts of random, weird, but also, oddly enough, appropriate crap just around, and it kind of adds to the surreal, chaotic feel of the place.
It makes me remember Don't Go in the House. Because both of these movies, you have the villain lives in this place that's run down and cheesy and skanky, and the wallpaper's coming off or the walls are stained, and it just feels like someplace I would never want to step foot in the first place.
And the interesting thing is, so you have all the scenes at the hotel are this weird, disjointed, odd primary lighting, controlled fog. And then you go to the bar or the whorehouse or the police station, and it's all normal. Normal lighting, normal fog. It's very everyday. So obviously the stuff that's happening at the hotel is an insight into Judd's mind.
And it's all loud. It's all noise.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I did not like about the film, is the sound. There's all this noise happening. It's a very screamy film.
Well, yeah, tons of screams.
And the music is just weird. It's creepy, which is a plus, but it's disjointed. It very badly detracts from it. This was my least favorite aspect of the movie, and one of the main reasons why I'm not willing to watch it again for at least a while.
I'm going to be the complete counter to that. I thought the music, I didn't like the music, because you can't like this screechy, clangy, bangy music. But I thought it worked well with the movie, and I thought it was a perfect snapshot of Judd's insanity, so I liked it. As far as you can like something like that.
Would you listen to this as a DVD put into your DVD player as background music?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
This music was terrible. But that does not necessarily mean that it's inappropriate.
Well,
I would never listen to this as its own thing.
I found myself twiddling with the volume going, how do I make the music go away but not the rest of the audio?
So, no, you'll get no argument from me that the soundtrack is, in fact, terrible and unlistenable, but it does fit the movie.
Well, you're right about that.
So what'd you guys think of the story? As such as it is.
I thought it was, I wouldn't say it was disjointed. I'd say it was basically almost non-existent. It's a bunch of premises hanging on a branch.
As far as the story for me goes, I thought it was interesting how this is almost it has a very strong Psycho vibe to it. Consider this. So you start off with somebody you think is going to be the main character, the prostitute. And she goes to the hotel, gets killed, and wait a minute, you were supposed to be the main character. No, you're not. Now you're dead. And she dies right about when she has a turn of heart. Hey, I'm probably ought to go back to home and sort it out with my dad. Oh no, here comes vengeance for me.
And then you've got a series of people that show up and antagonize the male lead.
One Who is them, a dysfunctional weirdo.
Yeah, and one of them investigating definitely. What's going on gets done in.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of this whole thing that what you don't know about a house you've just stepped into can possibly kill you.
Well, the other thing is, when the family shows up, his reaction to them initially is kind of normal, but he keeps going up to them. Like he wants to do something or say something. And then he goes off and he mumbles to himself more. And he does this a few different times. It's like you can tell he wants to kill him. But because there's three of them, he's a little unsure how to get away with it. But it's made easy for him because the dad finally works up the stones to go and deal with the problem with his family's dog getting eaten. And he goes to his car, he grabs his shotgun, and he goes and he's going to shoot the gator. And Judd is like, no, that's my pet, or words to that effect. It's completely in Juddese, which is his own special language. And then he's like, oh, wait, I got one of them all by himself. Great. And kills him and tosses him to the gator.
No, the movie does excel at having atmosphere. It is very atmospheric, and that's probably what landed on the list, is that it's more disturbing than bloody.
Mm-hmm. I mean, anytime Robert Englund's on screen, I just, you know, like, yeah. it's great.
You could tell, I mean, it's like, yeah, you're going to be a big deal someday. You're going to be...
Oh, he had it. He was the it guy in mm-hmm. this movie. I mean, he's handsome, he's sturdy, you know, and he's Buck, who loves the fuck.
Sadly, he's pretty much also a pretty bit part still.
Yeah. I mean, but he did chew up the scenery whenever he was on, and, you know, it's just like, yeah. Oh,
well,
yeah.
Well, the bit where he's in the bar, and he's playing pool with his date, who is completely hot, and all of the other guys in the bar are checking out his date.
Oh, and his buddy comes over and starts doing this weird dance at him.
Yeah, and he's like, get away from me. I'm taking her home. You can see why the girl goes home with, or goes to the motel with him. But on the other hand, probably because he was the best guy in town. But on the other hand, you're just like, man, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, but in a little town, when you have, you know, it's either the sheriff or the crazy guy at the motel or fucking Freddy Krueger, you know, it's, you know, which one are you going to fuck?
One of the weird things about this movie is because of Robert Englund's performance and the fact that he stole the show every single time he was on screen, you really expected him to be the hero.
Yeah,
you
know, to go
kind
up
of,
against...
Kind of a dark underhero that goes, wait a minute, something here is happening here that's bigger than me. I better man up and do something.
I expected him to go after Judd and kick and whip his ass, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Interestingly, I noticed that the movie doesn't have a protagonist to it. It's really just kind of this mush of characters. Series of victims and no real driving hero. It doesn't really have an antagonist or protagonist, it just has characters.
It's basically kind of like the first Friday the 13th, where the whole thing was set up for the entire, you know, type of that particular kind of slasher, where you had the victims and you had Mrs. Krueger and Mrs. Voorhees, Pamela Voorhees. The alligator in this movie isn't really a bad creature either. It's just as Judd says, it's a creature of habit, following instincts. So, you know, you put meat in front of an alligator, it's going to eat it. So I really couldn't blame the alligator for eating the people or the dog.
I can, however, blame the special effects guys for a shitty-looking alligator. Because that looked terrible.
It was a horrible alligator.
Yeah, but again, we're talking a small studio film as opposed to Jaws.
It was a horror gator.
So, yes, major flaw of the movie is that poor old Toby Hooper couldn't afford a real-life alligator.
He couldn't afford the giant alligator out of alligator.
Yeah. So, it's a good thing that we barely see the alligator at all in this movie.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Alien. What you don't see that much of is better.
Mm-hmm.
Less is more. You know, the Hollywood standard.
I think the closest thing we have to a protagonist is the older sister. But that's a bit of a stretch because we don't see her an awful lot.
She doesn't take a much of a proactive stance in the movie. She just spends most of her time reacting
to what other people do.
And she takes forever to do it, too.
So she doesn't have a lot of agency.
The only time she actually... There's only two times where she actually stands up and acts heroic. One is when she goes and finds the other woman and lets her go. But it takes her forever to figure out that something wrong is going on.
Yeah, it's like over a minute.
Yeah.
With all the screaming outside, the screaming inside.
Yeah. And the other time is when she gets the sheriff to man up and actually do his job. But, I mean, this is one of the weird things about the film is that The border between hero and villain is really blurry.
It's almost like, well, originally when Toby Hooper did A Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. When Toby Hooper did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you could very clearly tell that he had no fucks to give about how to make a movie. He said, rules? Where we're going, we don't need rules. And went and did his own thing. There's still a little bit of that hanging over with this movie where it's pretty much Toby's like, I'll do what I want to do. You know, fuck y'all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he made an engaging film that's really messed up. I mean, it might not be a four-star classic, but it still hits all the right marks, I think, with the horror and the gore and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And another thing is, I mean, these characters are obviously, most of them are archetypes, not to be taken internally. You know, so they operate upon their own logic rules based on their type. You've got the creepy hotel manager who has some kind of weapon, in this case a scythe. Or a pitchfork. You know, it's something to do the people in, and it's always something different. Then you've got the damsel, in this case a couple damsels, tied to a bed. You've got the really agitated father and, you know, sibling of the missing woman. You've got the kind of lackadaisical, needs to be motivated sheriff. You've got the handsome but kind of surly stud. You got a series of prostitutes, and then you got the madam. And then of course the dysfunctional family from hell, the nuclear family of the 70s. Let's face it. I mean, this is like the Hanford meltdown of families.
Oh, they really are.
Oh, my God, in Himmel. And that pretty much melted together into this thing. Then you've got, of course, the creature. that has to be something either aquatic or semi-aquatic or whatever in order to gin up the fear, especially if it's underwater, because then, you know, you put a human underwater and they can't breathe, obviously, so they got to get out of there. The only way to get out is to swim, and swimming does no good.
Because it's an alligator, and alligators can walk.
And apparently this alligator can hit up 40 miles an hour on land, according to Judd.
Probably can. I mean, alligators can haul ass. Look at crocodiles, some of them. But, oh yeah, then, of course, you got the creepy-ass house, and then the really weird kind of loose dock that if you step on it, you'll probably pitch over in the water. There's always something unsafe about
the
these kind of places.
It is practically a character in and of its own right.
It's a skanky-ass, dodgy interior of the mind, basically.
Yeah.
And it reinforces the parallel for Psycho, because you have creepy rundown Bates Motel, and you've got creepy rundown Starlight Motel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this movie bears a similarity not only to Psycho, but as I mentioned one point or another, don't go into the house. For various reasons, because of the nastiness of the antagonist slash protagonist, and the interior of the houses in this movie and Don't Go in the House are all run down and skanky, and you've got this one special place where the deaths happen in each movie.
Here it's the dark.
And in the other movie, it's the burn room.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's more based on the real-life story, very loosely based on the real-life story, of Joe Ball. He was a guy in Texas who, he had this belief where if you can't find a body, then obviously there's no murder because, well, there's no murder because you can't find a body. So he would murder people and throw them to his pet pet alligator at his hotel.
Hmm. Hmm. Okay, I can see the parallel there.
Yuck.
Of course, the police showed up and said, "Dude, what the fuck are you thinking? Of course we can charge you for murder, you idiot." And he wound up shooting himself in the head. So you got anything else left you got to say about Dead Alive? Dead or Buried? Dead or Starlight fucking Motel? Whatever the fuck this movie's called.
Fucking alligator people. It was entertaining. I found myself entertained more than I thought I'd be. It started off a little slow, but then the atmosphere, once the prostitute reaches the hotel, it just was straight up exploitation. All grainy and weirdly colored stuff. I was like,
it took me a while to get into the groove of the movie. I'm like, why is this so weird? Why is this so on a stage? But then once I figured out what Toby was doing, then I got, okay, I see where the flow is going. So I got more into it.
Yeah.
The first time I watched this, I figured this out. That out about the time the family showed up. The bit, earlier bit with the doesn't want to be a prostitute, I was like, this is really strange and disjointed and odd. And when she goes in and she starts trying to get a room from Judd, I'm looking at him and listening to the way he's talking. I'm like, run, woman, run.
This can only end in bad for you.
Yeah. But then I was like, oh, okay, I, when the family shows up, I'm like, yeah, I can see where this is going.
Yeah, this movie would not have worked as a location shoot. The staging and the
It needed
studio,
to be claustrophobic.
Yeah, the studio setting definitely puts it in that hyperbolic realm of fantasy that this film needs, and it mastered it and sent it home. I mean, it knocked it out of the park for me.
So you got anything else you got to say about this flick?
You make a good point that everybody in this movie is at least a little bit crazy, because a lot of these people react to him like he's an ordinary innkeeper. And it's obvious from the first second a word slips out of his mouth that he's completely insane.
I have been to enough roadside motels through the South and the West to know that this is not a good place to stay. I should go and depart straight away. I totally would have never stayed here if I was on the road.
Which makes you wonder what these people's version of normal is, wherever they're from.
Maybe it is all just a fever dream from Judd. Maybe it's all a product of his imagination.
Or maybe it's the prostitute's dream or Buck's. You know, a woman tied up on a bed, woman stripping from, you know, what looks like a coat is a freaking dress, and she's got nothing but panties.
If this was Buck's dream, he'd be there to fuck and no alibi.
Well, he was there, so. Yeah. I guess maybe he couldn't get it up. Maybe that's why he ended up getting eaten.
All right, well, that's
that's our hypothesis.
What a hypothesis. So, Brad, was Death Trap appropriately left off the list?
I can certainly see why they would consider it, but I also think that by our somewhat jaded modern standards, it definitely isn't all that horrific of a movie. There is some stuff in it, but...
The movie is more disturbing than violent and disgusting.
This is a perfect example of how fucked up the list is. I mean, it's entirely inconsistent because you have films like Texas Chainsaw, which was really intense and vile.
It's a fucking brutal movie.
And, I mean, it's more realistic because,
and
I mean, this
done
movie...
done by the same director.
This movie was shot entirely on a set, and Texas Chainsaw was shot in locations, so it has the reality of being a normal film about people just going from one place to the other, and then they get stuck in this house, and then it becomes a terror, you know, nightmare. Whereas this is atmospheric, it feels stagey, you know, it has this giant animatronic alligator. Obviously, they had some money, whereas they didn't in Texas Chainsaw, so things are ramped up. It's more hyperbolic than real.
So appropriately left off the list, acquitted, give it a pass.
Mm-hmm.
Case dismissed. Nope, it's off the list.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yep.
Off the list.
So did you like Death Trap?
I loved it. Enough to see it a couple more times, and then not for a while, but I liked it.
I mostly enjoyed it. There are a few things that I didn't like about it, but mainly the sound and the music. But I would watch this again, although I would prefer maybe edit out the music, perhaps.
So I think at the end of the day, for me, it is a watchable movie, an enjoyable enough movie, but there are other Tobe Hooper movies that I like significantly better than this.
I could watch it a couple more times because the atmosphere just won't let go of me. It's just dug its claws in and it will not let go of my neck.
So, very enthusiastic, mildly enthusiastic, and I'm kind of cool on it. It's not a terrible waste of time. All right, well, I'll catch you next week.
Hey guys, Ashley again. Eaten Alive. Great movie, great alligator action. Thank God for Tobe Hooper. Well, next week, we get the original cannibal movie from Umberto Lenzi, a.k.a. Zoom Lenzi, the man from Deep River, a.k.a. Deep River Savages, which kicked off the whole animal mutilation craze of the 70s and the 80s. So come back next week, like and subscribe, and email us at thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and we'll see you there.